You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast as always. Got a lot of good stuff to talk about that's going on in the sports world. Can't wait to dive deep into these topics. But first, man, before I go any further, y'all, it's hot, man. Hot is really an understatement if you ask me. It's scorching outside, especially in Atlanta. I don't know where you are listening to this right now, but man, in Atlanta, it is hot. It says it's 91 degrees right now, but it really feels like 99. If you ask me, it really feels like 110 degrees outside. You really can't stand outside for more than 5 to 10 seconds without busting out in a sweat. So, hey, wherever you are, man, make sure you stay hydrated, drinking water, man, and doing what you need to do, because it's wild out here. And make sure you're staying safe out there, man. If you're vaccinated, awesome. For those of you who aren't vaccinated, I encourage you to do that. If you don't want to, no judgment on my part. Just encourage you to wear your mask, sanitize, wash your hands, and do everything that you need to do to make sure that you're staying safe and that you're looking out for yourself and as well as other people, man. We got, you know, all these variants that are coming out and going around right now, and cases have been skyrocketing. So, again, just want to encourage everybody to do your part, and so we continue to just, you know, move through this thing, and God willing, that, you know, we'll be able to overcome this, and I trust and believe that. And we saw this week that the FDA approved the Pfizer vaccine, which is, you know, a big step, obviously. So, you know, just continue to monitor everything and continue to do what you can to stay safe. But man, like I said, it's crazy stuff going on in the sports world, y'all. So let's go ahead and dive into our topic. So first, let's discuss the rookie quarterback. So, you know, the question out here right now is, you know, we've seen the rookie quarterback class has come in, and I'm talking Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, and Mac Jones. And then obviously you have a few others, but those are, you know, obviously the top five names that have been talked about heading into the NFL draft. They've been talked about the entire offseason, training camp, especially going into preseason now that we've gotten a chance to see these guys actually on the field. So how many of these rookie quarterbacks are actually going to start in week one of the regular season? So if you ask me, I personally believe that three rookie quarterbacks are going to be starting in week one of the NFL season. Those three names are Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, and Trey Lance. Trevor Lawrence has already just recently was named by Urban Meyer the starter for week one. There's no surprise there. And, you know, he hasn't necessarily let's just look at each and every one of these guys. I'm going to, you know, talk a little bit more about him. So Trevor Lawrence hasn't necessarily done anything magnificent in the preseason. We know the first game he got, you know, welcome to the NFL. He got sacked a couple of times. I want to say he got sacked on his first pass that he dropped back to throw. But he hasn't necessarily done anything that magnificent. But he is a better quarterback and a better option than Gardner Minshew. You know, he clearly gives the Jaguars the best opportunity and the best chance to win football games. Now, he has made some pretty nice throws, and he has built a connection with his newly acquired wide receiver, Marvin Jones Jr. However, like I already mentioned before, he has been sacked, and he's been sacked three times so far in preseason. And he has not thrown a touchdown yet in the preseason. So out of the two preseason games that he's played, he hadn't thrown a touchdown yet. The O-line for the Jacksonville Jaguars is just bad. You know, they're just awful, man. And you can clearly see that, especially in the last game, preseason game number two, when they played the New Orleans Saints on the road. You know, he's back there just running around trying to create something out of nothing. And, you know, they just recently lost Travis Etienne, which is his college running back at Clemson, for the entire season due to a mid-foot sprain in which he required surgery. and it's going to be ending his season before it even begins. So just a lot of just stuff that's really tough in Jacksonville right now. And it's going to be tough for a young, you know, kid like Trevor Lawrence stepping in and obviously being the face of the organization right now and having to take on this quarterback role, the QB1 role with not a lot of production that's expected to happen on, you know, this season with this offense. And offensive line is that is huge. You know, you have to have a solid offensive line, especially when you have a young quarterback like this, a rookie quarterback who's coming in. You need to protect them. You know, if you can protect him, at least he'll have the ability to survey the field and you know, find the open receivers. But the one thing that has stuck out about him, like I already mentioned before, he has built up, you know, that connection with Marvin Jones Jr., who is a veteran wide receiver, which was a good solid pickup by Jacksonville, somebody that Trevor can lean on and he can learn from throughout this season. So let's look at Zach Wilson. So Zach Wilson, second guy who I said is going to start, obviously, you know, he has proven that he can make the tough throws that an NFL quarterback needs to make. You know, he also hadn't done anything that's like, oh, my God, that's been very magnificent, which you don't expect that necessarily. But some of these throws that he's made, similar to like Trevor Lawrence, he's really gone out here and shown that, you know, he has the capability to put the ball where it needs to be. And he has a good understanding of the offense and what they're trying to do. And, you know, let's just look at what he did against the Packers. You went 9 of 11, 128 yards, 2 touchdowns, had an 81.8% completion percentage, and he averaged 11 yards per pass versus that Packers defense. And you know, some of those on that defense were starters. So, you know, in the Packers defense, they have a lot of good depth on their team. So whether that's the ones and the twos, they still have solid depth on that defense. And, you know, Zach Wilson was able to have some success. And so when you're looking at a guy like that, who he really, and let's be honest, there's no competition there. There's nobody really there that he's competing with at all. You know, they have, what, 3-4 other quarterbacks on the roster, but there's nobody that's competing with Zach Wilson right now to be the starter. And, you know, that's something that also sticks out, because there's not really a vet guy that's, you know, back there that's really pushing him. So it's going to take a lot on that coaching staff to really get him to understand and really continue to get him to play to his fullest potential, because without having that vet behind you to push you and to really kind of guide you, it does make it tough on a young guy, because it's what other teammate can you necessarily lean on? You know, they may have quarterbacks on the roster that may have been on in the league, maybe have been on a practice squad for a few years, X, Y, and Z, but there's not really that guy that he could really go to necessarily, like, you know, how, and I know Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre didn't really have a great relationship, but, you know, how Aaron Rodgers could, you know, look to a Brett Favre, or how Jimmy Garoppolo could look to Tom Brady, you know. So there's not that presence there, that veteran presence of a guy who's had success in the NFL at the quarterback position. So, but I definitely think that with Zach Wilson's abilities and, you know, to throw the ball and also use his legs, he obviously provides you and gives you the best chance to win. And last but not least, let's look at Trey Lance, the third guy who I think is starting. And some people may raise their eyebrows about this, but looking at Trey Lance, man, I know Jimmy Garoppolo is expected to be the starter, but they haven't named a starter yet. And this is interesting, because Trey Lance, let's look at the facts, y'all. He's clearly shown that he's the better quarterback, and he allows Kyle Shanahan to open up that playbook a whole lot more than what he can do with Jimmy Garoppolo. He can really get Trey Lance on the move, and we saw that in his first preseason game when he had a play-action rollout pass and then threw it across his body for an 80-yard touchdown. You know, he can do different things like that and still know that if it's not there, Trey Lance can make something happen with his legs. Jimmy Garoppolo not necessarily cannot provide that element. Trey Lance brings a whole different element to the quarterback position that Kyle Shanahan would love. Having a guy that can run that type of offense and then be dual threat at the same time is huge. You know, Trey Lance, you know, he is a true dual threat quarterback, and he can make all the throws. He went 8 of 14 for 102 yards, 2 touchdowns versus the Chargers. And one of those touchdown drives being that first touchdown drive that he had, he led them down the field with, what, about 30 seconds on the clock. Made a beautiful pass up the, down the sidelines and drove them within scoring position. And they were able to bring it home and score right before half. And then he also came back and was able to score another touchdown, which he threw a nice throw to Travis Benjamin. So he's really shown that he could put some zip on the football. And so I think that when you're looking at this thing, when you're Kyle Shanahan and you're looking at the situation that you have right now, I personally think that they should go with Trey Lance, because, I mean, he gives you the best chance, man. He, you know, and maybe they don't go with him as a starter. Maybe they don't. Maybe they put Jimmy G out there, and if he starts to struggle, then they could transition Trey Lance in. But if you ask me, if I'm Kyle Shanahan, man, I'm putting Trey Lance in. As you already, you know, the offensive line is solid. You got, you know, solid running backs, and you got a solid defense. You got some weapons at the wide receiver position. So you surrounding him with the things that he needs to be successful. And so let's see what he could do. And, you know, looking at the last two rookie quarterbacks that I didn't mention that I felt like were going to be starters, obviously you have Justin Fields, and a lot has been circulating around that quarterback situation in Chicago. But, you know, obviously they're still following Matt Nagy's plan, you know, for Fields to sit behind Dalton and really learn. But if you ask me, I really think that, you know, they've really gotten into the situation where they told Dalton that he was going to be the starter before they even drafted Fields. So they're in a situation where they're sticking to what they told Andy Dalton. But just because they're putting him in there, I really think that this is they're putting him in there because they told him he was going to be a starter. But when he starts messing up, you know, I think Andy Dalton is on a short leash. You know, once he starts messing up, then you know it's Fields' time, and they can cover this up in, you know, to the media however much they want to. But you can clearly look at both quarterbacks and see that Justin Fields gives you the best opportunity to win with his ability to be able to escape the pocket. He can kill you with his legs, and he can make really great decisions when it comes to putting the ball in position, and you have to respect his ability to run the ball. So I really don't give this formula, this little thing that they're doing with the quarterbacks. I would imagine that Fields would be in no later than week 4 or 5, if you ask me, just depending on, you know, and this is going to be contingent on if the Bears offense is putting up points. That's what they need to do. Last year they weren't putting up points. They were only putting up a little over 20 points a game, a little over that, 20, 23 points a game. They need to be up in the 30s, you know, and not settling for field goals. There was a lot. That was an issue last year, you know, driving the ball and settling for field goals. They need to get touchdowns. And if they're not getting touchdowns, you got to go with the guy who can get you some touchdowns, and that's Justin Fields. So, and then last but not least, look at Mac Jones. So with Cam Newton out, Mac Jones actually has a huge opportunity to make a case to be the QB1, and this is dependent on how he's going to perform against the Giants defense. Obviously he'll get an opportunity because Cam is out with the COVID situation due to like the failure and the miscommunication with testing, and so now he's forced to sit out 5 days. So Mac Jones has been taking those reps with the starters in practice, and obviously he's been impressing the coaches, especially in 7-on-7, 11-on-11 drills, and with his ability to be able to process the game and to be able to distribute the ball where it needs to be. So Bill Belichick, you know, and I heard something on TV the other day, you know, Bill Belichick, he's not going to wait. And that's 100% truthful. You know, the guy that Bill Belichick is, he's not going to wait. And, you know, if he sees somebody that's going to give them the best opportunity right now, he's going to play that person. And Listen, he's not going to care about egos. They don't care about any of that in New England. So, you know, Cam is, he's got his back against the wall right now. And it's definitely going to be interesting. You know, I personally think that even despite, you know, the situation that they're in right now with him being out, I still think, you know, even if Mac does light it up in his last preseason game, I still think that they're going to go with Cam to start off the year just because of what happened last year with him not really having an offseason at all. And then him, you know, he obviously had COVID and, you know, that took a toll on him as well. So, and then didn't really have any wide receivers and no real solid tight ends to really work with. But now with them having Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, well, Hunter Henry's actually hurt. So, but they have better weapons on the offensive side of the ball now. And then obviously you get a nice running back in Damian Harris. But they actually, Patriots just traded away Sony Michel to the Rams, which was interesting. So kind of, you know, weird for them to do that right now. But, you know, it is what it is. And the Patriots have never been afraid to trade anybody away. But we'll continue to look at it. So talking about the rookies, let's look at, you know, who I feel like could be Rookie of the Year this year. So I'm just going to give you one guy that I think that is in a great position to be able to win Rookie of the Year this year. So my prediction is actually going to be Najee Harris, my boy out of Alabama. You know, Najee, you know, he's built for this moment. You're talking about a guy who's 6'2", 230 pounds, and he's really a threat, not only running the football, but also catching it out of the backfield. And he's very powerful and explosive. And Najee Harris, he puts the Steelers in a great position versus what they were in last year. Obviously, we know, you know, no Le'Veon Bell. James Conner was having to come in. He ends up getting injured. And you know, things, they went 11-0, but, you know, after a while, they became predictable. They became one-dimensional. In those last five games of the season, they struggled. And then that translated into them getting blown off their own field against the Cleveland Browns in the wild card round. So, you know, they really got inconsistent, and they were not able to move the football running it. So teams knew that they were forced to have to pass the ball. They knew it, you know, and when you get in situations like that, when you're predictable and people already know your game plan, there's your chances of winning are slim to none. So, you know, they now with the addition of Najee Harris, who was a huge steal, he gives them that different element. And again, you have to respect him not only running between the tackles, but running outside, being able to bounce the ball out, bounce the football on the outside, and use his speed. And like I said, Najee has really great hands. And if you don't believe me, go review the tape from when he was in Alabama and the catches that he was making when the ball was put up in the air, especially in 50-50 balls sometimes too, you know, and that ability to jump over defenders. It's insane to watch him be able to do that, you know, consistently. So, and obviously, you know, Trey Lance and Justin Fields are in the mix. Mac Jones is a dark horse as well. But, you know, with Justin Fields, obviously, it just depends on how soon he'll be in. And Trey Lance as well. Those two quarterbacks, it's contingent upon what, you know, the coaches decide and if they really want to give them a chance. And with 17 games in the season, you know, they do have opportunity. Even if both don't start until week three or four, they still have a chance to make up some ground being quarterbacks, you know, and always having a ball in their hands. So, and like I said, Mac Jones being that dark horse as well. So let's transition and talk about what's going on in Indianapolis with the Colts. So Carson Wentz is actually back practicing. And he's expected to be ready by week one. So the question here is, are the Colts making a mistake trying to rush back Carson Wentz? So let's look at the Carson Wentz situation and just kind of review what's happened. So like I said before, he actually returned to practice on Monday. And this is 3 weeks after he had surgery to remove a broken bone from his left foot. And this is his first practice since July 29th, excuse me. Now, his surgery was on August the 2nd. The original timetable for his return was 5 to 12 weeks. Here we are 3 weeks post-surgery back at practice. Now, he has been limited at practice, but he's still taking reps with the starters in 7-on-7 drills. Now, head coach Frank Reich said that he feels like Wentz looks good and he's a week ahead of schedule. Wentz says he's optimistic that he'll be ready for week one. When Wentz was asked if the 3 weeks was enough time for him to be ready, he said it's going to have to be. And looking at who the Colts play week one, the Seattle Seahawks at home. So are they making a mistake rushing him back? Absolutely, 100%. I get it. I get Carson Wentz is the guy. You brought him over, you know, matched him up with, you know, back up with Frank Reich. You know, that they already have that relationship. Obviously, you bring him in and a series of unfortunate events happen. He gets hurt. It's something that we've seen happen to Carson Wentz his entire career. You know, he's just been plagued with injuries. But they really, really need to be cautious and careful about what they're doing right now. 3 weeks, they're trying to have him ready so quickly, and I just don't think that that's the smartest formula to take. Obviously, you don't want him to be out for a full 12 weeks, but it's so soon, and to have him without having, you know, he's lost a lot of time when it comes to practicing. You know, over a month of being able to practice, and well, just it's approaching a month of not practicing actually, and you know that they're just in a situation right now where you don't want to risk Carson, who's already been injury prone, to get injured again, you know, especially with the foot. That's big, you know, and you're going up against a tough Seattle Seahawks defense, and you know, I don't know that that's the smartest decision for them to do, and especially like I said, with 3 weeks, and he's obviously not going to play in the preseason, so you're going to have him out there week one. Oh well, with the last preseason game, everybody's going to have about two weeks in between before their next game. So yeah, Saturday and Sunday is the last preseason game. So people will have, you know, just about almost 2 weeks before they play their first game. But again, it's just one of those situations where we know Carson Wentz's history and we know what he's been through. So do you really, as the head coach, want to risk that and then have to, you know, you shoot yourself in the foot and then now you're forced to go with a Sam Ehlinger or a Jake Fromm for the rest of the year? So it's just something they need to watch, and they really need to put him through extensive drills and make sure that the movement is there, because obviously he's limited. He's 3 weeks off of surgery, so you know that, you know, right now that movement is not going to be where you need it to be. There's no way you can tell me that his footwork is going to be where you need it to be by week one. I'm not buying that, you know, not at the level that they needed to be at, not at game speed level. I'm not buying it at all. So I get you want your guy to be out there, and you know, they're paying him, you know, a lot of money, and it's, I get it. But is it worth risking the entire season? You know, God forbid something happens and he re-injures it, you know? So they just really need to monitor that closely and make sure that he's at least 80-85%. Because anything other than that, you know, I'm not confident that that'd be the smartest decision. So, you know, we'll see what happens. So let's now transition into college football. So, y'all, college football, it started this weekend, man. Just, I can't begin to explain how excited I am about college football starting this weekend. And obviously, we know it's not any huge, huge games going on. I think the biggest game is Nebraska and Illinois. It's like the first game of the day. And after that, you have like four or five other games with smaller schools. But Nevertheless, college football is back, and then next weekend we'll get the big matchups. You get Bama, Miami. You get Clemson, Georgia. You know, all the exciting matchups that we're looking forward to seeing. So looking at the upcoming college football season, you know, let's talk about thoughts and expectations for the upcoming season. I'll give you guys, you know, what I'm expecting, how I feel about it, and then, you know, we'll just go from there. And, you know, when I'm looking at this upcoming college football season, I'm really, you know, I'm excited, obviously, to see the fans, you know, back in the stadiums. And you know, obviously, I want everybody to stay safe, and I want everybody to just do their part, you know, wear their mask and everything like that, because I know these stadiums are going to be full, and I know... You know, it's gonna be packed in there, because obviously last year we're not having fans. Some stadiums had fans, some didn't, and so it's just really one of those situations where you want everybody to take precaution. But I'm excited to see fans, because the fans are, you know they make up such a huge part of the game, and it's really exciting to be able to see them. You know, just riled up, and how the teams and they really feed off of the fans' energy. So they're going to play a really huge part in, you know, in making sure that the game is each and every game is exciting. So questions here, you know, I'm interested to see, you know, if the SEC is going to reclaim its dominance that they've had in recent years. You know, I'm an SEC guy, obviously, went to Alabama, graduated from Alabama as well, Roll Tide. I'm just interested to see, you know, are teams in the SEC going to, you know, get back to how they were, you know, years past, especially when I was in college, how, you know, the SEC really dominated college football, and they had six, you know, seven teams deep, and that could hang and stick with anybody, and they could beat one another. So how is the SEC going to respond? Obviously, you know, a lot of teams have a new look this year, and you got guys that are stepping up now that have been in these, you know, these programs for, you know, going into their second year, some their third year, that are having to really step up. And then obviously you got your seniors that are, leading the way as well. So I just want to know, you know, how the SEC is going to look as a whole, and if they're going to put a stamp on the conference's name. And we'll get an early, you know, taste of that, obviously, like I've already mentioned, with Alabama going, you know, we got the SEC ACC matchups starting off the year with Georgia and Alabama and Miami and Georgia and Clemson. So I'm really hyped to watch both of those games. And also, what the recent news about, you know, Texas and Oklahoma leaving the Big 12, and then now the new news coming out about the ACC, the Big 10, and the Pac-12 forming an alliance. Is that going to be, you know, a distraction this year? You know how the media is going to constantly ask these coaches about, you know, these alliances and how they feel about, you know, where college football is going and the state of college football right now. Is that going to become a distraction going forward? Because I'm pretty sure, you know, we're going to continue to hear this as a reoccurring topic throughout the course of the year. And we'll continue to see it being discussed each and every Saturday, especially on College Game Day. I'm pretty sure they'll touch on it, obviously. And there's going to be a lot of focus on the direction that college football is going, you know, as we transition going forward. So, and then last but not least, how would a new look Bama, you know, how are they going to look coming off of last year's national championship performance? You know, obviously, you know, a lot of players have transitioned into the NFL now. And so, you know, it's definitely going to be exciting to see how, you know, the younger guys stepping up. And obviously you got Bryce Young is, you know, new era starting at the quarterback position in Alabama. Something we're excited to see. And so just looking at, you know, the roster now and the guys that they're bringing in, the guys that have been waiting on their opportunities, you know, I'm really, really excited to see how these guys are going to step up you know, what they're going to do and how they're going to establish their mark right out the gate. So you know, I'm confident in what Alabama's putting forward this year. So, you know, and then looking at each conference, man, it's definitely going to be interesting to see, you know, who's gonna win each conference. You know, obviously, I'm taking Alabama to win the SEC, and you know, over the next weeks, next week I'm gonna give you guys my prediction on who I think will win each conference, and who I think, you know, has actually, you know, while I got some time, I mean, I'm in no rush. I might as well do it right now. So with the ACC, I'm going to go with Clemson. Obviously, I think that, you know, I'll go with them to win this conference. For the Big 12, I'm going to go with obviously, I'm going to go with Oklahoma. But I do think, you know, Iowa State is a team that can, and let me backtrack before I go any further. Clemson, I picked Clemson to win, but, you know, UNC is a team, and Miami is a team that could push, you know, obviously push Clemson and make it interesting, especially, you know, with the guys that they have coming back, and you know how things are going to look. But looking at, you know, their schedule, Clemson doesn't play either one of these schools, so that's going to be big, you know, not having both of them on their schedule. So we'll just see how, you know, Miami and UNC respond, but I'm picking Clemson. And just going into the Big 12, like I said, I think Oklahoma, but I think that Iowa State is going to be a team that pushes Oklahoma as well. We've seen Iowa State become a spoiler in years past with how they've spoiled people's dreams, and especially in you know, in the Big 12. So I also think that in their conference, I think that Kansas State is another team that always seem they've given Oklahoma trouble over the last few years, man. They've continued to give. I think they've beaten them twice in a row, and nearly did three times in a row. I know they beat them when Kyler Murray was there. They beat them last year on the road at home, and you know, I think that, you know, they just given those guys a lot of struggles over the past couple of years. In the Big Ten, I'm going to go with Ohio State to win the Big Ten, but let's not rule out, obviously got your other teams in here that make it interesting. Penn State, you know, sometimes makes those games interesting if they match up together this year, but I'm going to go with Ohio State. I think that they're, you know, they're the team to beat, and I think that they're going to win that conference. In the Pac-12, I'm actually going to, the Pac-12 is just so weird, just because, I mean, there's literally no defense, you know, Pac-12 and Big 12, literally no defense. But I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to rock with Oregon to win the Pac-12. You know, they're always known to have that speed and they have track stars on that offense, man. And, you know, I like Oregon. I think they'll come out of the Pac-12. And then obviously, you know what, you already know who I'm rocking with in the SEC. Like I already said, Alabama. But right now, you know, the SEC, obviously they have six teams ranked in the top 25. So Alabama being one, UGA is five, excuse me. A&M, Texas A&M is number six. You got Florida at 13, and you got LSU at 16. So the committee, you know, or the coaches poll that came out, they're obviously showing the SEC some love. So we'll see if any of the other teams can get in, and how many of these teams can maintain their status in their position in the top 25. So those are my early conference predictions, and obviously going forward, we'll continue to discuss them continue to dissect each and every one of them. And let's talk about the Atlanta Braves real quick. So the hometown of Atlanta Braves, they're actually, they were 9-1 in their last 10 games, but now they're currently 9-2. They just lost to the Yankees at home. So 9-2 in their last 11 games, which is still really good. So current record right now is 68-58. And they have a 4.5 game lead in the NL East. Well, it might be four games now that they lost their game last night. So they have the 11th best record in Major League Baseball, and they're seventh in the Major League Baseball in hitting. So they currently have 612 total runs scored, 1,003 hits, which is obviously increased because they had a recent game. They have a .242 batting average. They have 52 stolen bases, .323 on base percentage, and a .431 slugging percentage. And I think the biggest thing, you know, it's huge to be top 10 in hitting in baseball, especially, you know, with them being seventh in hitting. Obviously, they're getting to the plate. They're seeing the ball, getting guys on base. That's huge for the Braves. And, you know, they've had a lot of success and they've gone on a streak. And obviously this streak was snapped and they have a 2-game losing streak right now. But we see how streaky the Braves can get when they start rolling. And I think the biggest thing that really stands out to me about the Atlanta Braves is their relief pitcher, Will Smith. He's actually tied for second in saves with 28 on the year. So when you got a relief pitcher like that can come in and really secure those victories when you have the game, you know, won and get those final outs that you need, that's huge. And you need those closers on each and every ball club. And I think that's one thing that's really stood out for the Atlanta Braves and it's really been beneficial for them. And those are things like that really are going to help you going into October when you start to get into playoff baseball. And you need those closers, especially in tight game situations. You need those guys that you can really lean on and trust. So Will Smith is a guy that's obviously, like I said, he stepped up. He's second in saves and tied for second in saves with 28. So it'll be good to see how they continue to progress and if they could go on another hot streak, which I think that they will go on another streak heading into October. And last but not least, man, I just want to touch on, you know, Sha'Carri Richardson. Obviously, you know, she made a return back to the track in the Prefontaine Classic this past weekend. And this is her return to the track after not being able to compete in the Olympics. And now the Classic was held in Eugene, Oregon. Sha'Carri Richardson didn't, you know, turn out how, you know, a lot of us expected her to place, but she actually ended up finishing last in a field of 9 runners in the 100-meter race, and she actually ended up withdrawing from the 200-meter race. And the time that she ran in the race was 11.14 seconds. And again, I said she finished last in the field of 9 runners. Now, the race was actually won by Olympic gold medalist Elaine Thompson Hurrah from Jamaica, and she clocked a 10.54 for the second fastest women's time in history, and this is behind Florence Joyner, aka FloJo, which her record of 10.49 was set in 1988. Now, Sha'Carri Richardson, after, you know, first and foremost, you know, congratulations to Elaine Thompson. Obviously, you know, outstanding accomplishment to be second behind FloJo. That's huge. And man, she can really, really move. And we saw that in, you know, Olympics, and she's not getting slower, any slower. So that's a fast woman. I just wanted to touch on, you know, Sha'Carri before, you know, I closed out and everything, because, you know, she showed a lot of emotion and passion afterwards when she was asked about how she felt about the race. And, you know, you saw the passion and obviously she was disappointed. And, you know, she said this was only one race. She isn't done. She also highlighted that, you know, she's the 6th fastest woman in the 100-meter race, and nobody can ever take that away from her. And, you know, obviously I'm not going to repeat what she said, but she said you could talk all the stuff that you want about her. And, you know, everybody on social media, the critics and everything like that, she really was trying to embrace, you know, anybody that it was hating on her and everything like that. And my question, you know, obviously, you know, are people being too harsh on her? And I think they are, man. And it's really crazy to see some of the things that I've been seeing on social media. You know, people coming out and talking about, oh, you know, she needed to be humbled and, you know, this X, Y, and Z. And it's like, when was she not humble? You know, at what point in time was Sha'Carri not humble? Just and people oftentimes they mistake people for being confident in themselves as them not being humble. And that's not the case. There was not one point in time where she talked junk about any of the other, runners that she was going up against before the race. She never shaded any one of them beforehand. And I just don't understand where people are coming up you know, coming up with this stuff. And people will oftentimes try to create a narrative about certain people, you know, to fit whatever story that they're trying to create. And this false narrative about her not being humble is completely ridiculous. So, you know, and then you got people that are really just being insensitive about the whole situation. You know, this is a girl. She's 21 years old. She just turned 21. She's coming off of, you know, a traumatic experience. Obviously, hearing about her mom passing away right before she was having to qualify for the Olympics, especially not hearing it from family, but hearing it from a reporter unexpectedly, man, that takes a lot of toll on you. And, you know, obviously being away after being suspended and not, you know, being disqualified from being able to run in the Tokyo Olympics, you know, not being able to really do anything for a whole month and, you know, coming out, you know, she obviously was disappointed. And I thought she would place, but something really just seemed off. It didn't really seem like she, you know, at the start of the race at about 50 meters, it seemed like she just kind of pulled up and just, you know, wanted to finish it out. She was really just more so, you know, saying she just wanted to return back to the track and, you know, get her feet wet and everything. And, but something really just kind of seemed off about it. You know, maybe, you know, it's still things that she's dealing with, obviously, and it took a lot to, you know, come back out to the track, obviously, and after what she just went through. And I said this on another show before when I was talking about her situation. You know, a lot of people have a lot of stuff to say about how people should do things and how they should deal with grief, but none of us know, you know, what she was going through. And you know, obviously some people can relate with the loss of, you know, a parent and everything like that. But I really personally feel like, you know, nobody's too good to tell somebody how they should grieve. And obviously there's ways to grieve, but in that moment, sometimes people make decisions spur of the moment and they deal with pain differently. And we're not in any position, nobody on this earth is in any position to judge somebody on how they choose to grieve, you know, and that's just something that people have to understand. And just, you know, going back to the race, you know, obviously, you know, it was a setback. Obviously she didn't perform like she wanted to, you could tell, but she's not finished. The girl, like she said, she's only 21 years old. She has a lot of running left in her. And I think that this is actually a good thing that could happen, because it really builds the perfect comeback story for her. You know, people are laughing at her and, you know, they're you know, she finished in last place. And now at this point in time it becomes a matter of, you know, what do you do from here? What steps are we going to take going forward? What is Shikari going to do going forward to get herself back to the level that she was at? And then not only getting back to that level, but exceeding that and really, really being great. And I think that she has a lot of years left ahead of her, and she's gonna be great, and she's gonna, you know, she's gonna shock the world. And I'm really rooting for her and standing behind her by that. And, you know, say what you want about her and make all the jokes you want, but, you know, we need to do a better job of uplifting and encourage one another. And you don't compare. And I also was seeing comparisons about, you know, oh, LeBron, we shade LeBron and stuff like that when he's done. LeBron is 30 plus years old, okay? We're to make comparisons in these are two different types of situations. So to shade somebody after they're struggling dealing with a loss is not the same as criticizing LeBron for losing in the finals or getting swept or XYZ. That's not the same thing. You know, they're different situations, obviously. So let's not be insensitive, and let's use our common sense, people, and, you know, encourage her, man. You know, because right now, I'm telling you right now, when she gets back on top and is really, you know, doing her thing, these same people that are doing what they're doing right now, they're obviously going to come back and try to be act as if they're, you know, on her side, when in reality they were making a joke about her the whole time. So, you know, just something to think about. Hey, rooting for Shikari, man, and I'm excited about, you know, where God's going to take her next. So, but hey, that's all I have for y'all, man. I appreciate y'all giving me the time to talk some healthy sports talk, as I say each and every week, man. I appreciate all the love and support, man. Continue to rock with me, man. Share the show, you know, send it out to people, man, and tell people about it, man. I would appreciate, you know, any support that I can get, man, and you know, it's greatly appreciated. You don't know how much, you know, it means to me to have everybody listen and, you know, give any feedback. So again, man, thanks for rocking with me, man. I'll be back next week for another good show. Let's talk some more football and other stuff coming up, man. So hey, be blessed as always, and roll tide. I'm out.